Alright, somebody count me down. Ready?
5, 4, 3, 2.
Hello, welcome to the Flatbill Pastor Podcast. My name is Marky Harrison. And who are you again?
My name is Clinton James Nolder.
Okay. Hello. This is episode 5.
5.
5 dollar foot long.
Cinco.
De Mayo. We just celebrated.
We did.
And episode 5, we're talking about something that concerns everyone, actually.
Everybody.
Every single person has to do with, interacts with, uses this thing.
Yes.
Go ahead and guess what it is. I'll give you 5 seconds.
Toothpaste.
Well, hopefully everybody uses toothpaste, but maybe not. Well, let me go ahead and tell you. It's money.
Money, money, money.
Yeah. Everybody, money. Everybody uses money. Everybody needs money. Everybody wants money.
Uh-huh.
They spend a lot of time getting it. Spend a lot of time spending it. Spend a lot of time thinking about it.
Writing songs about it.
Writing songs about it.
Money, more problems.
More money, more problems.
That's right.
That's what they say.
Mm-hmm, that's what I hear.
But in this context, we're talking about money in a very specific environment, and that is money and church.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a loaded subject for a lot of people, you know, like, first of all, we live in a world where things just require money.
Yeah.
And that includes the church, but
things are costing a lot of money.
Yes.
Recently.
Yes.
Yeah.
But before we go into that, we need to thank some people.
We do.
Thank you. Jacqueline's dad.
Jacqueline's dad.
For these coffees.
Yes.
That we're consuming behind camera and on camera right now.
That's right.
We got ours at the Leaf and Bean today.
Yeah.
Down here in downtown Noonan on the square.
Yeah.
Delicious.
How about it?
Got some vanilla lattes, bourbon brown sugar lattes.
Bourbon brown sugar.
Yeah. That's right. Okay. And anyway, we just wanted to give you a shout out. Thanks
to Jacqueline's dad.
Yeah. Thanks for fueling this episode.
Yeah. Sponsored our coffee this morning. I don't drink coffee. But everyone else got coffee, so thanks,
yes,
Jacqueline.
Yes, everyone else here is normal. So we all are enjoying coffees.
Uh-huh, that's it.
Anyways, back to what we were talking about with money. Is a lot of people have concerns with how the church uses money. So what do you have to say about that? Like,
yeah.
You know.
Man, this is really difficult. When I have conversations with people who are disconnected from the church, whether it's they've never been connected or they decided intentionally, I'm walking away from this. Almost always, one of the big conversation pieces or topics is money.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, one of the phrases I hear most often is one of the reasons I don't want to go to church is the church just wants me for my money.
Mm.
You know, which, honestly, is probably true in many circumstances.
And that's what I was kind of getting at earlier, is the church obtains money in kind of an unusual way compared to most other things in conventional, you know, capitalism.
Right. So, I mean, and that from that side of things, you create something or you manufacture something, right? Create something. You produce a product. And then someone wants or needs that product. And so they exchange money for the product.
Right.
And that's the way it typically works. And so then from a church standpoint, obviously that's not really the purpose or the reason, but it's difficult to separate how we deal with money in every other part of our life and then see money differently in this one particular section. Right.
Right.
So we would see from a church standpoint, we would say, hey, we think that surrender in terms of life surrender includes each and every part of our life. And so one of those pieces and parts are our finances.
Okay.
And so would we say, hey, God, we surrender 100% of our finances to you for you to have input into how we utilize those finances? And is there a portion of this that would go back into the mission of the church that from a biblical standpoint is put in motion by Jesus and the Holy Spirit and God as an answer to the vehicle that will spread the good news about Jesus? And then, so then we, do we bring those finances? And that's a question we ask. Hey God, what do you want us to do for our, with our money? But then again, there's the tension of, hey, maybe God's going to orchestrate what we do with all of our money. But then is there going to be a specific piece of that that's going to go towards church mission, towards God's mission, towards, you know, what Jesus desires to accomplish here? Are we going to surrender that? And then, but the other thing is, because there's a million different churches to choose from, it's kind of like we are shopping a bit. It's like, okay, well, I'll take some of my finances and invest in a place, but I do want a product in return, and I'm going to shop around. That's the phrase we use most on church shopping, right? And so I'm going to shop around and figure out which product do I like the most, and then that's where I'm going to invest my time and maybe even my abilities, my talents, my know-how, and maybe even some of my finances in exchange for a product that I like. And so it's, I think, in that world where we get a little bit, a little messy.
Right. So like somebody who may be a little bit, misinformed, or they're misunderstanding the whole point of the church having money to begin with, or how God talks about money in the Bible. They may have the capitalist mindset of like, well, I'm going to shop around, see what I like, you know, what can I invest in, so to speak? What do I like? What do I want to see my money do here, kind of thing? And so, I mean, I'd like to understand that a little better. Like, let's roll it back to, you know, I mean, besides the obvious of like paying for the utility bill and the building and the communion and whatever, like, why does the church need money?
Well, I can speak in general terms about churches as a whole. I can speak in specific terms in the church that I lead. So in general terms, it's what you said. It's if there's a facility, right, then it's whatever that cost is. Some churches rent a storefront, or they rent or lease some space. Some churches own their own space. I mean, there's the upkeep and the utilities from that. Mm-hmm. Even if you're completely mobile, you're renting something. You know, we planted and we're mobile from the beginning. And so we rented a school a day a week for about 4 years. And so there's those kind of expenses. And then you've got the normal expenses if you have a staff.
Right.
So here at Foundation, we have 6 full-time staff members and 1 part-time staff member. And so those funds, you know, go towards that. And then on top of those initial, you know, facility and payroll things, it's all the ministry things that you want to accomplish together. And so whatever programs that might be, you know, funds go towards that. And then in our particular context, we spend a lot of money in our community.
Okay.
Whether it's something as simple and small as we have an ice cream truck that we take to charity and community events. It's just a simple way to serve our community with no strings attached. And so it's an old UPS truck that we wrapped and put a window in it, and it's got freezers in it. And we just buy ice cream from local store and put it in the freezers, and we just go around and we give it away.
Right.
And so it's something as small as that to something as large as significant financial investment in other nonprofits that are doing really incredible work, or assisting people who are in need, who are going through a really difficult patch in their life, whether it's financial assistance for medical things or a homeless situation or bills that they're struggling to get paid. And then we also attack community issues together, you know, where we would take a look at things that are happening in our community and say, hey, how can we pool our resources together to put a dent in it or maybe even eradicate it altogether? And so, I mean, there's been various opportunities throughout our 5 years post-launch, 6 years, including our 1 year pre-launch, to do things like that in the community. So that's in general terms, that's where funds go.
Okay. So would you say that aligns like with how we see the use of money in scripture. Like obviously there's some alignment, you know, with having a building and then having the resources to fulfill needs like people in poverty, sure. hunger, social concerns and issues. Like there was some yeah. kind of like, do we have examples of that in the Bible? Like, where do we see examples of how God is teaching us how he would be using money?
Yeah. Well, we definitely have a Jewish version of this. And so when we read in the context of the Bible, especially in the first century, when we read the life of Jesus and the life of the closest friends of Jesus, the church planter Paul, they're all existing, at least in their own religious right, our own religious way of things, and in a Jewish culture where there would be a temple, and or a synagogue, and they would bring offerings. You know, when we look into the Old Testament, it begins by telling us that there was an expectation for the Jewish nation to bring a tithe or 10% of what they would accumulate, and that they would bring that offering.
Okay.
And so when we get into the New Testament or from the life of Jesus forward, we see that Jesus participates in those Jewish activities or religious activities, that the disciples participate in those activities as well, that they were in good standing with the temple. And so we know from that perspective that that was existing. Now, what we don't really have in the New Testament are examples of what we do today. You know, we didn't have individual church buildings like we would see on, you know, I mean, just here in downtown Noonan, there's six churches. There's a church right next door to us, a church across the street, two churches, three blocks over, and then one church, two blocks over. Right. And so that wouldn't be a normal thing. You know, obviously we've got denominations everywhere. So there's two Baptist churches, two Methodist churches, one Presbyterian, and then we're a Christian church, non-denominational Christian church. So, you know, that is for sure not the norm in the first century. And so, but people would bring funds to church leaders or the religious leaders, even post-Judaism, like when they've become Christians, there's examples of in the book of Acts of people bringing their offering. They would sell property and they would bring portions, or sometimes people would bring all of it. If they had an enormous amount of excess, and they would bring it to the apostles, and they would say, hey, this is what we're going to contribute to the church. There was a lot of use for collecting money to take care of widows and orphans.
Okay. That was my next question, was how are they using it?
Yep. Widows and orphans is a very practical example. There's a famine that's going to be taking place, and they're aware of this. And so there's a drought type deal where there's an enormous need. And so other churches begin to take up offerings for other people that are going to be experiencing some of those hardships and those hard times. And then what we see is that there are people that contribute to the work of the church. In the first century, an enormous part that we have recorded are these missionary journeys of going from one place to another, planting these churches.
Okay.
And we know that those are funded. Sometimes it's funded by the individual pastor. Paul, for example, is a tent maker. And so he has a separate job in addition to what he is as a pastor. And so he kind of helps pay his own way that way. But we know there's a lot of people, even in Jesus' ministry, that contribute to allowing him to do what he does. And we see that precedent played out. Through a big part of the first century. So what we see is taking care of community needs and people who can't help them, who can't really help themselves, widows and orphans. We see people who are sick or people who are facing really difficult times and the church helping with that. We see the church being incredibly generous with their excess and what they have and putting it to the discretion of the church leaders to say, hey, I don't know exactly what we're using this for. Like, you didn't say, hey, I need all of your money to go towards this project, but it's just a part of continuing what was started and the root or the birth, the birthing mom of Christianity, which is Judaism, and honoring God with some of that. And we see that being brought, and we see that there's care being taken care of pastors who are doing the work of Jesus. We see all of that in the New Testament with money that's given towards the church.
Okay. So you mentioned the the act of entrusting mm-hmm. money with people in charge at church, so yeah. to speak. And I seem to recall a story in the Bible where that kind of goes awry, and Jesus is there and he kind of gets upset about what is taking place.
Yeah.
And we see that a lot, I think. And that's why a lot of people have concerns with money in the church's hands. Yeah. So, like, do we see the lack of transparency as an issue yeah. that maybe in that darkness, these issues and misuse of money yeah. come to life?
Well, let me make sure I explain that story that you just referenced, just for anyone who's like, hey, what are we referencing here? And I'm assuming this is Jesus in the temple and the money changers. Okay. So Jesus is in town in Jerusalem for a festival. It's one of those festivals where everyone kind of comes to the temple to participate in the religious activities. And there were different sections of the temple where only certain people could go. And so there was a section where only the priests could go. And there was mm-hmm. a section where only Jewish men could go. And there was a section where Jewish women could go. And then there was this other section. It was called the Court of the Gentiles. And anyone, even if you weren't a Jew, you could still go and have reflection and ponder, hey, is this God that these Jewish people worship?
Mm-hmm.
Is he legit?
Okay.
And you could begin a process of searching for God in this particular place.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was the largest piece because there's a lot of those type of folks that were not connected to Judaism, obviously, in and around the city. And so it's an enormous space. And so the Jews decided, because it's so large, let's set up our little market in here. Because there were people coming from all over. They would bring animals to sacrifice at the temple.
Right.
They would have to bring an offering. Well, people who had traveled a really long way wouldn't bring their animals. And so they would purchase animals once they got there.
Mm-hmm.
There was also an issue where people who were coming from different countries or different cities that had different currency, the temple wasn't going to take their currency.
Right.
So they had to have people do money exchange so that they can have the correct currency to give to the temple for their offering.
Right.
And so you put all those things together, and that's what was happening in the Court of the Gentiles. And Jesus walks in and he's furious. He's like, hey, you've taken what's supposed to be a place of prayer and you've turned it into like this marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
And so he flips the tables over and he's furious about it. And I think when I look at that particular passage and I look at that story in that moment, I think the thing that sticks out to me the most is not so much that Jesus had an enormous money issue with what was going on, because for sure, Jesus made the offerings.
Right.
Jesus brought the sacrifices. His family would have been in good standing with the temple. I think his issue, when I look at it, the heart behind it is you've taken the one place for people who are completely disconnected from Judaism,
mm-hmm.
connected to his father, and the place that we've set aside for them to kind of explore the possibility that God, that Yahweh, that Jehovah could be real. And we've now taken that over and used it as a marketplace.
Right.
And that just didn't sit right with Jesus. Like, why would we take their sacred space, their place of prayer, and use it for our own gain to kind of do our business like this? Like, why would we do this? And so he's flipping some things over. Certainly the reason that the money was there is because it was convenient to make this marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes that convenience also creates issues in our church.
Yes.
That, hey, from a financial standpoint, it sure is convenient that a lot of people feel like they've got to give money to the church. And we're going to leverage that. We're going to leverage maybe even that guilt, that spiritual guilt, to kind of accumulate some funds to do some things that we just really want to do that maybe God's not calling us to, but it'd just be nice to have. It's very convenient.
Right.
You know, those kind of things. And so, I think when that runs amok and it can get out of hand, mm-hmm. That's when we run into problems.
Right. So why do you think it's so easy for us to kind of let things get away from us when it comes to money? Like something as, you know, I'm sure these people were thinking like, this is just making things easier. It's convenience, you know, like we're making it easier for these people to, you know, participate in sure. what's happening here at the temple. And it's making it easier for on people just at, even outside of the temple, like we're making their journey here easier. And so why do you think that the religious leaders didn't have a problem with them kind of taking over their whole section of what they're entrusted with, the building, the place that they're entrusted with?
Well, I think any time where we prioritize our own convenience over the reality that people who are disconnected from faith might see that as an issue or a stumbling block or an obstacle to get to God, I think that's when we run into trouble. And so if money and finances are an issue for people who are disconnected, then the answer to that is not to make things more convenient for us as followers of Jesus. The answer to that is to have open conversations about, hey, let's explore this. Mm-hmm. Because the church is so segmented. I mean, I just mentioned there's six churches within a few blocks of each other down here in downtown Noonan. The church is so segmented that each church doesn't speak for all churches, right?
Right.
But what we can do is we can speak for what we have responsibility over.
Right.
And that's a conversation we can have with anyone. Mm-hmm. And so we attempt here at Foundation, we attempt to be as transparent as possible with people who want to ask questions and figure out, hey, so what are you doing with this money? Right. How are these decisions being made? And so I don't want to shy away from those questions. I want to sit down with people in front of them and say, hey, yeah, I'll explain to you what we're doing with this and how we have it. You know, from our standpoint, though, it's a little easier because we've been, you know, financially transparent from the beginning. Mm-hmm. I mean, our staff raised their own salaries for a number of years. In fact, it was just this past year, you know, finishing up year five, that our last staff member came or finished or concluded their fundraising for their own salary.
Right.
And so for the first 5 years, 1 year pre-launch and 4.5 plus post-launch, we had staff members that weren't taking any money from what was given in the offering for their salary. They went and raised it outside of our church altogether because we wanted to make sure that we could, from a financial standpoint, didn't overextend ourselves.
Right.
We wanted to have adequate staffing to take care of all of the needs that a growing church like us has. But we didn't want it to be at the expense of financial unhealth, if that's a word, financial distress of the folks that were gathering here. Mm-hmm. And so we decided to kind of grow into our staff as opposed to overload it with staff and put us in a financial strain.
Right.
And because of that, you know, we've been able to have really open conversations. Our budget is not enormous relative to the size of our church. In fact, relative to the size of our church, our budget is almost unheard of, like minuscule, but we're a pretty basic place. There's not a lot of fancy things. We're just concrete and carpet.
Yeah.
And there's drywall.
There is some drywall.
Yeah.
Not
a lot of fancy things.
Okay. So I'm glad that we're talking about, you know, in our context, what transparency looks like, mm-hmm. and that we give people the opportunity to come with their questions, and we're happy to be as transparent as we need to be in clarifying questions. For somebody who is not connected anywhere or has seen things go wrong in the context of money in church, like what do you need them to know about how things are supposed to be? Like right off the bat, what should they be looking for when they walk into a place? And how should they feel when people are talking about money from the stage, from the pulpit, from wherever they are as a leader in the church? How should you expect money to be discussed?
Well, that's a really good question. If you're disconnected from faith and you're trying to figure out, hey, I'm thinking about getting connected. Let me make sure I'm understanding your question. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about getting connected, but money is my issue. What are the things I should look for that should make me feel like, okay, this could be a safe place to jump in?
Right.
Right. Okay. I think the first thing is, you probably, I want to come across as super judgy with this. I'm just going to say it and I'll just get in trouble later. Okay. I don't know who I'm getting in trouble with, but for sure, probably someone. I think you can probably look at the facility that you're walking into and see if there's been a lot of extra expense.
So you're kind of looking out for, you're kind of looking out for extravagance or like unnecessary things.
I mean, are we walk it?
It's touchy.
Okay. Look, there's a new king of England.
Yeah.
Along with the king. How about that?
Yeah.
So if king you walk, Charles. If you walk into a church and it feels like you're walking into King Charles' place, mm-hmm. You probably have spent a little bit of money. Maybe I'm going to get in so much trouble. That would be a red flag for me.
Okay. Right? So
that would be a red flag for me. Like if I walked in and it was like, man, I feel like this is kingly. And I think the answer to that is, well, we want to honor God with what we have.
Yeah.
And this is the house of God. And so we want to make sure that this house of God is. And we look at the temple. I mean, one of the temples in particular was just, opulent. It was just gorgeous, spare no expense. And I think sometimes we want that. Like, man, if we're going to have the house of God, then we want it to feel freaking awesome.
Right. But what if there's like 25 houses of God in a square mile?
Yeah. So the problem is it's not actually the house of God. That's the problem. Yeah. Okay. Is that it's not the house of God. It's just a gathering place.
Right.
And the truth is that whatever church gathers there could do the same thing, right? In a place without all of that. But then the question is though, well, then what is allowed? You know, like what is allowed? And that's difficult because if honestly, you could do church without carpet at all.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You could do it without carpet. You could do church without speakers.
Right.
And so while we don't spend a lot of money on exterior things, we don't have a bunch of chandeliers hanging out everywhere. We don't have a bunch of fancy things. If you walked in, the truth is, though, we probably do have a speaker or two hanging from our ceiling that's more expensive than some people's chandeliers.
Right.
Right. And we have a video wall. Mm-hmm. That's more expensive than other people's chandeliers. Right. So our building looks pretty simple, but then there are some production elements that we would have where we probably spend more than other people would. I mean, there's some people that are still like just reading it right out the hymn book. You know what I'm saying? Right. They don't even have a projector. You know what I'm saying? And obviously they're not spending any money. So it's a difficult place to find. I just think if you walk in a place and it just feels like, man, okay, so this is where God dwells. Like it just feels.
So if I'm walking in somewhere, I'm completely disconnected. I do not have a place where I'm calling church home.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to figure out, and I've had experiences in the past where I have seen extravagance. I've seen misuse of money in church. I've seen, like, I have experience with this and I'm walking in somewhere with that lens. How should I reframe my mind? Like me personally, I'm thinking if I were in that spot right now, I would probably be looking around thinking like, do the extravagant things, or maybe not extravagant, but do the unnecessary enhancing things facilitate a better environment for what I want to be happening in a church? I think that's a good question. You know, does it make it a better, do these things make it a better place to facilitate things like healthy relationships and communication and family and community, like those types of things?
Yeah, I think the word you use is good, extravagant. And I think if it's extravagant, kind of, if I think that's probably the good word is I would say that would be the thing that I want to caution people against. If they're thinking if there's a money issue and money is their thing and they walk into a place, it's like, man, this is just extravagant. Mm-hmm. I would say that could be a red flag that maybe some funds aren't being used as wisely as we could. I say that and I feel like there could be any, I haven't thought of the exception though. I'm going through all the things in my head. I'm like, no, that qualifies. Maybe there's an exception. For instance, let's say that someone inherits a cathedral in Europe. That's extravagant.
Right.
But maybe they inherited it and there's nothing. And someone else made the bad decision to build this thing.
Right.
And whatever. And now they're there. So I think there's probably some examples of that that are here where someone else ages ago made a decision to build something by whatever it is. And there's nothing you can do about that. And now that it's just the facility that they're in. So maybe that's not a good, I don't know. Don't hold me to this. Hold me to it though, because I still feel pretty good about it.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think that's one thing. I think the second thing, other than just what does it feel like when you walk into a place, does it feel like, man, this is extravagant? I think the other thing is, are people okay with you asking questions?
Right.
Like if you were to go up and say, hey, here's a really good question to ask. Hey, how much do we spend a year on needs in our community?
Right. Right?
That's a really good question to ask.
Right. I mean, that's like a huge part of why the church even has money. So if that question can be answered clearly,
right,
that would be a red flag.
Yeah. Now they might not have a dollar and cents like on the spot, but I think you can get a lot from, are they willing to go get the number?
Right.
Right. Or they're like,
Right. There should be a number somewhere, or it should be evident to you, you know, after spending some time in a church where their money is going, mm-hmm. how you see it being spent. I think too, you know, if you're not really interested in the exact number, you can look around and think, okay, well, clearly we're spending a good chunk of our resources at outside of these walls, sure. you know, in schools and community and nonprofits and
right.
things, taking care of the needs that I see just living my life and in the community here.
Yeah.
So
and I think that's the important thing. And I think the reason the extravagant piece, it just sits with me in a place that just feels like, hey, this isn't a good use of funds, is we only use the facility a day or two a week.
Yeah.
You know, now the other churches might have some other programs running, you know, for kids or something like that. Mm-hmm. But I mean, in terms of like the overall main thing that happens for a church building, it's, you know, typically it's Sunday, sometimes Saturday night, sometimes it's Thursdays or whatever. Maybe some people have a Wednesday night meal or something like that. Or, mm-hmm. but like the big things are the gatherings, whenever the gathering is. And so I wrestled with us having a permanent facility at all, because it's like, man, that's a lot of resources going to a thing that right. we only do one time. And us renting them for one day, you know, in the high school before we got hit with the tornado, when the high school had a theater or an auditorium, it's like, man, we rent that for one day. And then right. we have a tiny office the rest of the week. And then when we need a bigger space, we go rent a bigger space. And it made perfect sense. Obviously, that's not there now because the tornado happened. But I mean, like that made sense to me. In fact, I was like, we could just be mobile forever. You know, that's right. fine. Let's just be mobile forever. We just need a big place one day a week. Well, when we decided to pull the trigger and make this permanent space happen in base camp in downtown Newnan, one of the conversations we had with our staff, in particular, our community outreach pastor, Jason, was, hey, this facility has to be available for our community to use
right.
the other 6 days of the week, or this doesn't make sense for us.
And exactly.
When I say use, I don't mean to rent from us so that we can make some money back.
Right.
I meant, no, for them to use it. Right. So I get if you know, we have people that pay for someone to come and clean it up afterwards. Mm-hmm. Right. Because that happens. But other than that, like we're not doing a rental fee for someone to come in and use our facility as long as it's a community thing. Right.
right.
Like. As long as it's, I mean, we had a NICU club here this past weekend. We do funerals for people that are not even connected to our church.
Yeah.
We've had fundraisers that were here for nonprofits. We've had school meetings that were here, whether it's teachers or students. We had a dance here for the band at local high school. We had awards nights here. It's open for whatever, like whatever our community wants to use. We have a really large space that seats a lot of people. And so instead of them going and spending $1,000 or $1,500 at whatever the theater is and company, whatever they're going to mm-hmm. do, Performing Arts Center, or whatever, then they can just use our space for free.
Right.
And that makes me feel a little bit better about, you know, the expense that we have here, which that was a whole other thing, making sure that we weren't in over our head when we bought a permanent facility and that it was very manageable. But even still, no matter what we spend on it, we've still got to use it in a way that's honoring of the money that is given to the cause that God wants to further in our community. And if we can't tie a facility or any other purchase to that cause where it's pushing it forward and it's moving the needle in terms of disconnected people getting connected with God, then it's a useless expense. And I think that's where the extravagance again gets me, is it moving the needle on the mission of the church, or does it just make the 99, when I say the 99 church people, or does it just make church people feel better about their building?
Right.
And if it's just making us feel better about the space we get to sit in, and it's not moving the needle forward, if it's not accomplishing the mission or adding to the mission, I think that's when it begins to qualify as this is just extravagant. Right. And I think that's why we can say, okay, well, carpet actually does help. We're going to put kids on the floor. Clean carpet helps.
Yeah.
Carpet helps because if we're going to have music, we want to make sure that, hey, the things are a little dead and we don't want to just sit in a concrete room. So those are positive things. It's the extravagant things. What's not helping the mission? What's not moving it forward? What is just for our own comfort and ease? I think that's where we get into trouble.
Right. So I'm walking in somewhere, I'm looking for these things, I'm asking the appropriate questions about where's our money going? And my mind kind of goes to, well, while I'm kind of getting adjusted to learning what you guys do with money, I don't feel comfortable like giving right now. You know, like what if I'm walking in somewhere and I'm not in a place where I exactly understand or trust what the Bible says about giving, what you guys say about giving to the church. Like, what is that okay? What should it look like to facilitate making the decision to entrust God with your money?
Yeah. When we decided to launch Foundation, when we started gathering a launch team, one of the things that I asked them to do was, hey, it's going to take money for us to do this thing, right? It's going to take money for us to do this. And it's going to take more money than what our little tiny launch team had.
Right.
But the truth is the reason we were planting a church was to reach people who had already told God no, or who had never given God a chance or a thought. And so I know without a doubt that the overwhelming majority of people who are disconnected from faith, one of the last things to do that they want to do is to give money.
Absolutely.
And so I told our launch team, I said, hey, in order for this to happen, we're going to have so many people give God a chance through our church. They're not going to give anything. And so I need y'all to go to other Christians that you know and say, hey, I'm going to sponsor the offering of a lost person. For 3 years. That's what the ask was. And so that's what they did. And so for 3 years, they went to their aunts and their uncles, other church people, and said, hey, we're planting a church specifically for people who have given up on God and or have walked away from God or have never given God a chance. And so they're not going to give anything. And we're realist about that. It's going to be the last thing that they begin to decide if they can actually do. And so, but it still takes money. So would you sponsor that offering? Would you give 50, 100 bucks, whatever it was? And they did. We ended up raising around $80,000, I think, through our launch team, fundraising outside of that. And I just know it just takes a long time. If you've got questions about God, the very first question you don't need to ask is, do I need to give? That shouldn't even be a question in your mind. If you show up in our church and you're disconnected from faith, I have no expectation that you're going to give. My hope is that you find Jesus and come to a place where you can trust Jesus before you even trust the church. And if you use the church to find Jesus, that's great. If you find Jesus without the church, that's great. Our primary objective is for you to have a relationship with Jesus, nothing else. And at the end of the day, like that's what it's got to be about. And that's always what it's going to be about. Once that relationship with Jesus has been formed, then it goes back to what we said at the very beginning. we surrender our entire life to Jesus.
Right.
All of our decisions, all of our possessions. Now, that means 100% of our money. We say, hey, Jesus, how do you want me to orchestrate this? What do you want me to do with this?
So that's like a big thing.
Yeah, it should be. It's 100%. It's everything you got.
Right.
Right. It's looking at it and saying, hey, this is what I have. How am I utilizing this to be the, I'm just going to use my example, to be the husband that God wants me to be, and the father that God wants me to be, and the community member that God wants me to be. And a lot of my finances impact all three of those areas.
Right.
And so I want to say, God, if this is one piece of who I am, what I have, how do I use that and leverage that to be the man that you want me to be? And finances are a big part of that. And so I want everyone to wrestle through what are those decisions. And sometimes our first piece of surrender is not even going to be what we give to the church. It's what we stop spending money on that we know doesn't honor God.
Right.
And isn't something that makes me the God, the father God wants me to be, the husband or the community member God wants me to be. But actually, I'm spending money on something that's pulling me off track. And so a lot of times that's the first place that we begin. It's not giving. It's stop spending on something that's just not God honoring, right?
Right.
That's the first place.
So in other words, if you're in a place where you are ready to start the process of surrendering the financial aspect of life to God, like you're thinking, yeah, I'm going to entrust God with this. You shouldn't be focusing on what does it look like when I'm getting it exactly right. I should be focusing on what is it, where is it that I am right now?
Yes.
What is it that I feel convicted about, or I feel drawn to this aspect of how I'm spending my money or this financial part of my life? And how does that honor God?
Yeah, I think you've got to start. You can't start anywhere else other than where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to look so far down the road and say, okay, well, I'm not even going to start walking a mile every day because I can't ever imagine running a marathon, right? Mm-hmm. I don't do anything right now. I can't even imagine walking a mile, or I don't even want to start walking a mile because I can't ever imagine running 26.2 miles. Is that one marathon?
26? I have no idea.
I think it's 26.2. Yeah. So for sure, like that's not what we want to do. Yeah, there's an idealized version of spiritual maturity that's out there equivalent to running a marathon, right? But who knows how long it takes to get there, you know? Some people get there a little faster than others. The first step for everyone, even the people running the marathon, was just to start moving a little bit. And not all at once, but just like, hey, can I get out and walk a mile today? It where you're at matters. And that determines what your next step is, you know? So get up and walk a mile. And your mile might be, you know, I'm going to stop spending on this or this or this. I'm not even saying you're going to then give that to the church. I'm just saying you're going to stop doing some things to your money that take you out of being who you're supposed to be. And then you figure out, well, what is my next step? You know?
Right.
And people will ask, well, how much am I supposed to give to the church? Is there a number?
Right.
Right. Because I don't even want to walk the mile if I'm going to be required down the road to do this, this, or this.
Right.
And this is something that it's debated. Everybody debates it. I mean, you got folks that will get super hardcore about is the New Testament church requiring a tithe? We're carrying that over from the Old Testament. What's the number? What's the specific thing?
Right.
And I think you can make an argument both ways. And of course, people on both sides of the argument would say, absolutely not. You can't. Like, okay, well, I mean, you do you. Mm-hmm. I think you can make an argument both ways for it. But honestly, that's not my concern. My concern is your relationship with Jesus. And what I know for sure is that when your relationship with Jesus is strong, then your finances will begin to be used in a way that honors what Jesus wants you to honor.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, then I have to ask the question as one of the leaders for our church, is our church honoring what Jesus wants us to honor? And when that is the case, Jesus will move in other people to honor him through what Jesus is doing through our church.
Right.
And what we know about Jesus and giving in the New Testament is that generosity is a key term. That someone being cheerful in their giving is a key term. Mm. And we also know that there's another one, and this is the hard part, is sacrificial is also another key term.
Okay.
And so when we look at those three things, we want to be asking the question, how can I be generous? How can I be cheerful? How can I be sacrificial? And when one of those three things are not something that describes what we do with everything that we have, we know it's a red flag. And so then we just want to chase down, okay, what is it? Why is it? Okay, so I'm giving, let's pretend I'm giving a tithe, a 10% off my income, okay, but I am mad at the world about it. Mm. I am just pissed at the church.
I could be going to Disney.
That's right. It angers me, right? Mm-hmm. If someone were to come and tell me that, I would say, hey, well, stop giving. Mm. Like, then stop giving. I don't want you angry at God or Jesus because you haven't got here and you're just frustrated all the time.
Right.
Because what's going to happen is eventually, because you're so wound tight about it, you're going to make a decision to not give to pay for whatever it is you want to go pay for. Right. And then when you don't give, guilt is going to set in, and then you're going to stop coming to church because you think, well, the only reason they accept me was because I was given, and I'm giving because I want to be accepted and I want to be whatever it is. Well, none of those things are connected to each other, okay, right? So I think Jesus will grow in us a spirit of generosity where we get excited about being a blessing or a gift in terms of what we have towards the mission of God and towards other people. Right. We try to tell our church all the time that there will be moments when you should use your offering money to do something for someone instead of giving it to the church. I'll give you an example. Let's pretend that it's Saturday evening and you're at the grocery store.
Okay.
And you're checking out. And you've already decided, like you and Luke have decided, hey, we're going to give X amount of money to the church, mm-hmm, right? And let's just say it's, I don't know, $80 or something. Let's just say $80.
Okay.
And you're like, this is what we're going to do this week. We're going to give $80 to the church. And you're behind this, let's just call her a woman. She's a woman in front of you. Hey, woman. This woman's in front of you. And she goes to swipe her card and it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Right. They've already checked out all of our groceries, scanned them all. And you see what happens. And of course, they're like, oh, well, sometimes the thing, the chip reader didn't work or whatever. Try doing this other thing. And she tries it and it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And then she tries again. It doesn't work. And so, you know what's happening. She didn't have enough money to cover.
Right.
Well, you're in a situation where now, okay, well, now I've got to figure out what am I going to do? Am I going to keep my money that Luke and I decided we were going to give tomorrow? Or can I use that to take care of this?
Right.
Now, of course, you could go deep in it and say, well, if she had made better life decisions, she wouldn't be in this situation.
Or what am I paying for? That's like, right. Am I paying for a carton of cigarettes?
That's right.
Or am I paying for some peanut butter and jelly?
That's right. You know what I'm saying? But you saw it, whatever. That's the decision you got to make. Mm-hmm. I would encourage people, hey, part of our mission statement is people are our destination. The church building is not our destination. People are our destination. And so in that moment, I would say, hey, if you got to give up giving offering, because you only have so much money. Mm-hmm. If you got to give up giving offering to show generosity as a Jesus follower to someone in need, how much more Jesus-like can you be? I would say you're being more Jesus-like in the moment on Saturday night at the Kroger checkout line than if you had rejected the opportunity and showed up and put it in the offering plate.
Right.
And so it's money is not about how much do I give to the church. It's about, does Jesus have 100% of everything that I am, including my money? So 100% of my finances, does he have Does he have dominion? Does he have authority? Does he have influence over all of it? And I tell people, it's okay for you to trust God before you trust the church with your money.
Right.
So God might, there's other incredible nonprofits in our community. Bridging the Gap is one of them. They do incredible work with the food insecure community. There's a addiction recovery center just across the street from us. It's called Coweta Force. They do mm-hmm. an incredible job. There's a crew that works with kids who are on free and reduced lunch called Backpack Buddies. Mm-hmm. They're an incredible nonprofit. There's so many people that do incredible work in our community. And you can see day in and day out what they're doing with their funds, right? So maybe you're called to be generous in that direction because you just don't trust the church.
Right.
I think that's okay with me. It doesn't bother me at all. I think the generosity that you need to give birth to in your own life, that's where it starts. Now, do I hope that at some point, let's just talk about our church, that our church earns your trust, that you would partner with us in terms of what you have financially? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hope so. Because I know that, yeah, I might have 80 or 100, 150 bucks laying around, but when I take like 100 people and all of us have 100 bucks, all of a sudden we can do a lot more than I could do with just my 100 bucks,
right?
You know? Or if we take 500 people or 600 people and everybody decides we're going to take a portion of what we have, and we're going to put it together, and we're going to start honestly doing enormous work in our community, where we're going to start moving the needle on the mission of God here in Noonan and Coweta County, that's pretty special. And do I want everyone to be a part of that? Yeah.
Right.
Because the more people are a part of it, the more we can take care of and the more we can do. And it's not just about, hey, the church needs to do something. It's that the community gets to see that there's unity amongst the followers of Jesus. And then when the followers of Jesus get together, they get stuff done in the name of Jesus.
Right.
So there's a lot of things that we do financially in our community that nobody knows it's from our church. Because right. It's not about, hey, everybody knows that Foundation does this, this, and this. I can't tell you how many times we've told people, no, you can't invite the newspaper.
Right.
You can't take our picture. Because at the end of the day, it's about what Jesus is doing in us and what Jesus gets to do in our community, not about credit or recognition that we get.
Right.
Now, if you were to come and ask me, hey, can you give me some of the things that we're doing in our community? I'll have that conversation with you. I'm not going to hide it from you. But we're not going to make public all of the things we do. Some things are unavoidable, right? It happens in such a public eye, you know, our ice cream truck, and there's other things that we do that you can't hide them. But there's a lot of things that we can do that we can hide in terms of how we help our community and the things that we pour into that we don't have to have credit or recognition for. So I'll have the conversation. If you want to know those things are
right.
You're like, hey, I want to know where this money's getting spent. Okay, I'll sit down and tell you. I'm just not going to broadcast it to the whole world because at the end of the day, it's important that the kingdom gets the credit more than just our church gets the credit, if that makes sense.
Right. It definitely does. So I just want to clarify, because I know that I have been in this mindset before. I'm sure somebody else out there has been in this mindset before, but it takes a while to understand, like in your heart, like fully comprehend that like there aren't things that you can do to be, you know, unified with God. Like they're not like physical things. Tasks to perform. Right. And so honoring God with money and allowing yourself to entrust God with money is just another benefit to having relationship with God. It is by no means a requirement for you to have relationship with God. It's another thing for you to enjoy when it comes to honoring God with your life. And so when you're hearing all of these, you know, there's arguments from beginning to end of how you should be using your money and where your money should be going and how much should you be giving to the church. Like you can talk about that till you're blue in the face, but our conversation around money wants to highlight the fact that it should be a a result right. of you surrendering to God. It should be a side effect of
it's an outcome.
Right. It's an outcome of you living in a relationship with Jesus.
Right. Yeah. It's 100%. That's it. It's not a requirement. I like the way you put it. It's not a requirement to enter into a relationship with God. It's the outcome of being in a relationship with God. Mm-hmm. And that process often takes a while.
Right.
The relationship starts and it begins to grow. And it isn't until that relationship is typically pretty strong that you get to a place where you say, you know what, I'm actually going to trust God with even my finances, mm-hmm. you know? And the thing is that, I mean, our church functions and is so healthy financially because people give so faithfully to it.
Right.
There's been many Sundays this year. I haven't even mentioned the word offering on a Sunday morning at all. Mm-hmm. And yet people continue to give. And I think the important thing that I've been wrestling with over the last 4 or 5 months, thinking through how often or not often I even talk about money from stage or in our gatherings at all, is that I had to start asking myself, do we talk about money without talking about money in ways that show people that this is important? Mm-hmm. And I've kind of reached out for some feedback from some people and just said, hey, have you even noticed that I've rarely mentioned offering, like maybe once or twice a month? Mm-hmm. And some people said yes, some people said no. But I think the thing that sits with me is almost all of them had said, but we hear you talk about offering, not in the fact that we need to give money, but we see the effects and the results and the outcome of we know what's happening with our money because so many good things are being done in our community.
Right.
That are very evident, or initiatives that are being started mm-hmm. or continued or supported. And so they're like, hey, you don't actually have to say, hey, we need to give money, because as long as we keep doing things, we know this costs money. Right. Like, we all live in a world where there's no such thing as a free lunch, right?
Right.
Take me back to 11th grade econ. So I think that's a big portion of it. So we couldn't do what we do without people giving faithfully.
Right.
And we live in the tension of we would cease to exist as a church, at least in the context that we are, if people decided not to give. While at the same time, I think it takes a long time for people to get to that place. Mm-hmm. And I think those three words I mentioned earlier, right? Generosity and being cheerful about it and sacrificial, that those three things are the ones that you want to concentrate on.
Right.
Those are the things I want to chase down. Which one of these are missing from me and why? And the answer to that question is really important, because it's going to tell you a lot about where you're at. And mm-hmm. that's where your next step is going to be.
Right.
Right. In one of those three areas of, I've got to really figure this out. And if you're in that place of, I give money, but I'm just super, you know, upset about it, ask, you need to find out why. Mm-hmm. And then maybe it's because you don't believe in what you're giving to.
Right.
And it's not that you don't believe in Jesus. It's just you don't see any evidence in the church you're connected to that it's actually doing anything other than opulence and extravagance. I get it. Okay. Yeah. Well, then the issue is not, hey, do I... It might be where you're giving the money, you know, and that's something you need to wrestle with, not ignore it, but to bring it to a place where generosity and cheerfulness and sacrifice, all three coexist inside of who you are in terms of your finances. And I think all of us have got to do the work to have those biblical principles present in our life. For some of us, it's going to take a little longer than others, but none of us should ignore the work.
Right, for sure. So we've talked about a lot today. Obviously, money is a huge hot button topic.
Yeah.
And all of us had different experiences with it, and all of us utilize it in different ways. And so we understand if you have questions or you want to talk about it a little more. We love hearing from people who are listening to this podcast or watching it on YouTube. So,
and for the low price of $19.99, I'll answer your question.
You can smash that subscribe button and put in your card. No. We just want to hear from you. So yeah. If you have questions, comments, concerns, compliments, you want to absolutely degrade us, that's fine. You can text the word podcast to 678-661-6330.
That's right.
And we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah.
And also, thanks again for the coffee.
Yeah, thanks for the coffee.
I feel fueled.
I'm glad you do. That's good. I'm glad we're ending now because my helicopter is about to pick me up.
Okay.
And so I'm going to hop into it and it's going to take me.
And you're going to jump in your Ferrari.
No, it's just going to take me across town to where I'm going to get in my jet.
Okay.
And my jet is then going to take me across the other town.
Right.
And that's where my Ferrari is. Right. It's not really a Ferrari. It's more like a, I don't know.
An Audi R8 matte black spider.
An Audi?
Audi, excuse me.
I'm just curious.
You know, I'm
why
just...
Why am I so critical?
Obviously, I've heard this from somewhere, and it's not, like, coming straight from, like, my head.
Uh-huh.
So, shout out to Luke. If you're listening to this, if you actually do listen to this, I'm sorry I embarrassed you.
Yeah. I think that I would prefer, like, a 2023 Ford F-150 King Ranch, just loaded. 250. Did I say 250?
Specifically.
Yeah, a 250. Just lap loaded. That'd be fantastic.
Massaging seats?
Yeah, with some wheels and tires. That'd be great.
Yeah.
We're going to monetize this podcast because we have so many listeners. And then so many. For sure, I would say that would also be a red flag. If you show up and that's when I'm driving, good. If I have a $120,000 truck, you should run away.
Right. Just run. Just run away.
I stole something from somebody. Yeah.
Well, anyway, thanks for,
Or someone could, instead of coffee next week, could just sponsor a King Ranch.
You could do that.
Is there a button for that? Is there a button for coffee?
Christian, please.
Can we add a King Ranch button? No? Okay.
Yeah. Or maybe just buy somebody else coffee in front of you in line. That'd be cool too.
How about it?
But anyway, thanks for listening to us talk about a lot of things. We can't wait to talk about something else in episode 6.
Money, money, money.
Peace.